here we go, now, baby, right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Before You Bet, here live right now on the Covers YouTube and X channels. Great big show planned for you guys today. A couple big games here, Thursday night football in the NFL, an elimination game in Major League Baseball going down in Milwaukee. I would argue the best two-screen experience in all of sports viewing. Primetime football on one screen, playoff baseball on the other. A lot of people would argue red zone and then just any game, NFL on a Sunday. Yeah, that's pretty good too. But I am a baseball fan and big stakes tonight in Milwaukee. Okay, guys, we are proudly presented by BetMGM. So make sure you check them out for all of your sports betting needs. If you are not subscribed to the Covers YouTube channel, make sure you hit that button right down there, covering everything that there is to cover in the world of sports betting. We just posted our picks for UFC 307. So if you are a UFC fan, a UFC bettor, make sure you check that out before Saturday's pay-per-view. Okay, so NFL, baseball, second half of the show, we're going to be all over the weekend college football slate with Jake Butt, who will be here for his weekly appearance. But first up, let's go to the man with the sexiest smile in all of sports betting. Jingles, how we doing, buddy?
I'm just trying to find dark mode on my PC. Just feel like an absolute 41-year-old man. Just trying to fumble my way through things. So that's life as a 41-year-old man these days.
Okay, so kind of an interesting game tonight here on Thursday Night Football. The Falcons kind of boring so far this season. The Bucs are pretty exciting, though. So hopefully we do get a good game. We have four total bets for that. Then we each have a bet for the MLB playoff game tonight in Milwaukee. So, Jingles, let's get right into the action here. And I'm going to get us started. I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I like them to cover the spread here as a small favorite plus a point and a half. So Tampa Bay might be a pretty good team here, guys. They're starting to stack up some quality wins. Season opener, they beat Washington. That win is aging very well. They had picked up a win in Detroit, and they beat the living crap out of the Eagles last week. They destroyed them by 17, outgained them by over 200 yards. They laid the smack down in that game. A lot of issues here for the Atlanta Falcons, especially on third down. They are 29th. In third down offense, so expect them to be punting a lot. 27th on third down defense, so expect the Bucs to be moving that ball up and down the field with ease. They also stink in the red zone. 29th in red zone offense, so expect field goal attempts, not touchdowns, when they get in close. And Baker Mayfield, I think this game sets up for him to be nice and comfortable out there. Atlanta 26th at pressuring the quarterback. And a couple of trends for you guys. The Bucs, road warriors, 9-2 against the spread in their last 11 games outside of Tampa Bay. And this one, it's kind of a fun one. I wouldn't use this as your basis for the bet, especially, you know, there's been coaching turnover, quarterback turnover for the Falcons. But since the start of the 2020 season, the Falcons have gone 6-18-1 against the spread in games after a win. We know they won last week. This team has a lot of trouble being consistent. I do expect that to continue into tonight. Give me Tampa Bay to cover the spread here. Jingles, we mentioned him. Kirk Cousins, you have a prop for him. What do you like?
Just betting the number on Kirk Cousins here indoors at the 228.5 passing yards on the over. He's getting, like, you pointed out a lot of things, right? Like third down, they're not moving the sticks. Hopefully those things can improve as he gets more comfortable within this offense. There's a lot to like. He's over this number in three straight. I think we're still kind of tied to what happened in week one. But over the last 3 weeks, his EPA per dropback, better than C.J. Stroud, Dak Prescott, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith. Those are some big names in that. And, I mean, completion percentage is up across the board in the NFL right now. But his 66% completion rate since week two doesn't really stand out. It's a positive CPOE, which means he's making his throws. He's getting it done. Hopefully we can get a little more work in the red zone, because we've seen already in primetime just how this offense can stall out. So hopefully a little more going. Everybody's healthy on offense. Antoine Winfield's out on defense. They do get Vita Vey back, which is big. And we saw the Sharps hit Tampa Bay yesterday, moving that from 2.5 down to 1.5. Hopefully some more passing. If Tampa's leading, that would make this a lot better too.
Okay, a couple of people in the live chat. 10P Kids said this game is about to be in the 30s for both teams. I would love to see that. You know, we've been getting that Thursday night football treatment so far this season, so I would love to see an exciting game here. Shout out to Neil Green as well. And Algiers, plus 220 to get into the end zone tonight. We shall see.
If Kirk Cousins is going to get injured, it's probably going to be on short week Thursday night football. Does it not feel that way?
Yeah. Hey, Michael Penix maybe tonight could get his number called. That would be interesting to see. Okay. A lot of people like Kate Otten tonight, tight end for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I am one of those people. I'm going to go with over 28.5 receiving yards for him. So he's really finding a groove within this offense. He got off to a slow start. The last two games, though, lots of success, totals of 52 and 47 receiving yards in those games. He's coming off a season-high 73 snaps.
Wow.
On 9 targets in that week 4 game against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think there's going to be plenty of balls to go around here for Tampa Bay. Their number 3 and number 4 receivers are out. Trey Palmer, Jalen McMillan will not be in the game. So I think Baker looks Otten's way early and often in this one. Another prop for you, but on the defensive side of the ball, who are we looking at?
Well, I was on Kate Otten. I released Otten over 3.5 receptions yesterday, plus 125, which was a giant number. It might have even been plus 135, but now it's minus 110. So it's kind of off the buy price for the projection of about 3.95 receptions. But everybody likes him. Scares me because I'm big on him. But there's a lot to like in Otten today in that spot because of obviously the big injuries to McMillan and Palmer. But on the other side, the Atlanta defense, they're missing some big tackling opportunities because they've lost Troy Anderson, who has been an absolute beast over the last 3 weeks, 38 total tackles. They're losing their top tackler. There are tackles to go around. We don't talk about tackle share much, but there's a lot more going on. So I've already trying to handicap this. Already looked at the other middle inside linebacker. His price has dramatically increased. So I've fallen onto AJ Terrell here, the cornerback, who starts 99% of all defensive snaps. So he's on the field a lot. We're getting a big number at this. He's gone over this number already in each of his games this year. And we have an indoor offensive game where indoors increases passing volume, increases passing efficiency. And we've already touched on the receiver issues with Tampa Bay. I mean, Baker's going to have to go to some of his key guys, and that could be Mike Evans on the outside. And Terrell has about a 50% shadow rate, so he could be on Evans quite a bit today if they decide to play a lot more man. So there's a spot here to take advantage of a soft market. That's not something I usually bet on, but plus 140 for a guy where there could be, I don't know, 12 to 13 extra tackles on the field in a game that's supposed to be decently paced. So give me the tackles there. Mike Hughes on the other side, the other CB, is also a decent look at the same number. He's even money at 5+. So I like both of those guys.
Okay. Jacob Evner in the live chat says, everyone is saying Bijan over receiving yards. Yeah, I think the number set at 27.5. That's pretty high for a running back.
I don't now, love the past 25 number for running backs, right? Like you're right. That is a big number. He's going to have to break one, right? His longest run is probably 12.5.
Now, a good case. I mean, there's two cases. It's Bijan Robinson, so he could obviously break a big one, but Tampa Bay has not been very good against running backs in the receiving game. So, yeah, I would not be surprised to see that come through. Okay, that's NFL. We got a big game here in Major League Baseball. Let's talk a little bit of baseball before Jake Butt comes on. So, Jingles, yesterday we saw three teams get eliminated from the playoffs. You can't really knock the Atlanta Braves. You know, they kind of limped into the playoffs a little bit. They didn't have Chris Sale. So that kind of sucked for them. So
they had to fly across the country on one day and go over to San Diego. Like, that's nuts.
That was rough. Yeah, you can't knock them at all. Good for them for just getting in. Good for them for not throwing in the towel after losing both Strider and Acuna. Most teams would have folded in a situation like that, but not them. The Orioles, you have to make fun of them. This is an epic choke. I know it's a young team, and everyone loves all these young guys, and they have these great regular seasons. That's an epic fucking choke, man.
Kansas City won the series with three runs scored, Joe. Three runs scored, and they won two games.
Baltimore scores one run on their home field. That is absolutely pathetic. I know you read that it's the young guys and, you know, the exciting players, Gunnar Henderson. That franchise has now lost 10 straight playoff games.
Bases loaded. Colton Cowser strikes out on a ball that hits him with one out.
It's choke city, man. Runners in scoring position. They've been awful the past two playoffs. So that sucks. I mean, that sucks for Orioles fans, but it is what it is. And you get this situation where you get into the, you play a regular season that goes on forever and you get into the playoffs and you have to perform now. There's no feeling out process whatsoever. And they very well might be in the playoffs again next year. But because of these failures, you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders in these situations. We might see with the New York Yankees. That's what I say about them. They get into
best of five.
They feel the pressure, right? There's no feeling out process here. So sucks for the Orioles. Whatever, though. The Royals, good pitching. Kind of clutch hitting. I mean, they only scored three runs, I guess. So I think the Yankees will be able to get by them. But let's give it a shout out to the Gritty Kitties. What a story this is, right? The Detroit Tigers. So
the story was fun, but the story's absolutely done. Cleveland to win the series at minus 125 is incredible, considering by far the best bullpen in all of baseball, maybe the best bullpen we've seen in a decade. Yes, their rotation sucks, but guess what? Tarik Skubal can't go game one. He probably will only go game two. There's time off between it. If they beat Tarik Skubal in game two, they take game one. Like it's a wrap. And minus 125, I think the books have overpriced Detroit, who, let's be honest, scrappy. Yes, you won a best of three. Now you got to win a best of five on the road again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sometimes with the playoffs, you have to throw out. I'm always going to be the stats guy. Look, hey, this bullpen's great. They're good against right-handed pitching, bad against left, whatever. Sometimes that doesn't translate over to the playoffs from the regular season. But it's all these notes coming out. So the Tigers had a 0.2% chance to make the playoffs back on August 11th. They were 10 games back of a playoff spot on August 13th. So it is a cool story. And they go on the road, they go down to Houston, and they beat them in two games. Now, my question to you, we saw some whispers of it yesterday after the Astros got eliminated in two games. You're going to see a lot on this if the Yankees, Dodgers, or Phillies get eliminated in this five-game series is the playoff format. Now, it's not unfair to anyone. Everyone is playing under the same rules. The Astros lost two games at home. That's their fault. But my kind of issue with it is the regular season takes forever. 162 games. You win your division, and then you have to perform right away. Like, there is no feeling out process. It's not, this isn't like a March Madness, like a one-and-done instant elimination type of sport. It's not football, one-and-done in the playoffs.
Close.
Do you have an issue with the playoff format? Do you think that they could revert back to maybe the three division winners and the wild card getting in? I think that might be, I like more teams getting in, but I think for a playoff format, the three division winners and a wild card from each league getting in, I think that might be the ideal format.
I think if you just keep the wild card, that's fine. Let's the other markets play a bit, right? You wouldn't have the Detroit Tiger story without it, right? Jays probably wouldn't have had a playoff game in ever without it since the 90s. So I don't mind that. And I don't mind the advantage that the home team has within it playing all three games at home. That is a massive edge, especially back to back to back. No breaks. What I do have an issue with is the best of five still in the divisional series. Okay. Now you've locked up one. You've won 98 of 162 games. You've dominated. You're plus 375. Favorites to win everything like the Dodgers are, which is just a dumb price. No one's running out to bet that. And now you're playing a best of five. Like, why don't you just make it a seven? I don't get it. Right. Adds revenue to everybody. It shows what you have for a full rotation. You go the whole year running a five-man rotation. Now people look at Detroit. AJ Hinch is saying, we got Tarik Skubal and chaos after that. They don't have a number two starter. So you're changing basically all of baseball, basically what you've run for the entire year during the playoffs now. So I don't love the 5-game series, and I think there's a substantial edge for – who's the edge for? The edge – San Diego will go in and face the Dodgers, and they didn't have time off, right? Like, sorry, they get time off, so they'll be reset. But whoever – the Phillies having to face whoever, they'll have a massive edge. So I don't know. I don't like the five.
I do like more teams getting in because you get the situations like the gritty kitties here. And the other argument is, okay, well, all of a sudden out of nowhere, the Yankees have this layoff and that might be actually hurting teams, right? 100%. I think that's kind of soft to use that as an excuse, really, because you do get to reset your rotation and stuff like that. But it is true. At no other point during the season do you have a week off and your opponent doesn't. And then they're matching up. So, yeah, maybe a bit of a rust factor as well. So, I don't know. Major League Baseball, they are crossing their fingers that we get a big market World Series.
Do you think the Yankees are thrilled to play Kansas City, who just scored 3 runs and won 2 games on the road? Like, Kansas City now has a different mental state going into that series, thinking that they can split games 1 or 2 in the Bronx just because of what they did in Baltimore.
Yeah, and JPC4 saying New York will choke no matter what the format. I don't know. I think they might get through to the World Series, but like I said, I would not be shocked if the Royals beat them the way that
Pacey plus 190 is a crazy is a big price.
Yeah, Giancarlo Stanton standing there with the bat on his shoulder, watching strike 3 go by to end the series.
Emmanuel Clase, who I think what like 74 games. Allowed like 15 earned runs. The guy's getting Cy Young votes as a reliever. I think the Cleveland bullpen has 4 or 5 guys sub 2 ERA. This is what playoff baseball is. Give me 5 innings.
This is Major League Baseball's worst nightmare. These fucking bullpen games. Remember when the Royals won a couple, they made it to the World Series or when they had their World Series runs playoff there in 10 years ago, whatever it was. It was, let's get 4 innings out of our starter and then a bunch of guys no one's ever heard of will be coming out of the bullpen here. Okay, let's discuss the game here. So I don't trust the Mets bullpen. I like the Mets offense. So how am I going to bet it? I'm going to take the Mets first 5-inning money line here, -104. I think it's a great number. We're back in Quintana here a little bit. He's in great form here, guys. 2 earned runs or less in 6 straight games. He has an ERA of 0.74. He has not allowed a home run in this stretch. 3 of those games, by the way, came against playoff teams. So he's not out there beating up on, the White Sox and the Marlins of the world. He has a pretty good track record here in the playoffs. 3-0 earned run performances in 6 starts. Now, here's the catch. The bulk of those came with the Cubs way back in 2017. But I think that shows, this isn't a guy who's afraid of the big moment. I don't think he's going to let the pressure get to him. This isn't Clayton Kershaw going out there for a playoff game. And what I like about the Mets offense, man, they've been aggressive in the series so far. It's only 2 games. They're getting after it early, though. 8 runs scored in innings 1 through 5 in the series. Tobias Myers pitching for the Brewers. He's never pitched in the playoffs, so who knows? Maybe the pressure could get to him a little bit. The Mets are going to come out swinging, so I like them first 5 innings. Jingles, your best bet for the game tonight?
Volume. Betting on just managers just doing dumb things with their rotation, and it's what they're going to do. Like, they're overthinking it again. They're going to know exactly plan A, plan B, plan C. Oh, Quintana's getting hit. We got to take him out. And even if he does get hit, I don't know if he gets to 5 hits allowed, because I think Mendoza will have to pull the trigger and take him out here. So on this at -117, we saw Luis Severino pitch over 100 pitches in game 1. But guess what? The Mets had to reset their bullpen after the 2-game doubleheader. That bullpen was absolutely gassed. Manaea was on a shorter leash yesterday. We saw it projects for just 79 pitches, 13.4 outs and 4.3 hits allowed. So I think that's a high end on the projection for what he could. We could see 15 outs, 60 pitches. We could see him struggle early with command because he's been that guy. But if you're looking at the other metrics, he's got a plus framer in Francisco Alvarez, pitcher's umpire in Vic Carapaza behind the plate. So there's lots of those things going well, but I'm on the other side. I have another one like Tobias Myers under 4.5 hits allowed. I think that's at -150. Same thing. The guy didn't get more than 12 outs in three straight starts because he's a rookie and his pitch, his career innings is as high as it's ever been. So I guarantee you that old Pat Murphy, who was the donkey who pulled Freddy Peralta in game one, who was dealing to watch that bullpen blow it, he's got an early leash here on Meyer. So I wouldn't be surprised if he went 50 pitches. That wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he went 12 outs in this game, even if he was dealing well. So watch for quick pulling on both guys from both sides of the dugout for sure.
John Mettler says, did you see Josh Hader makes more money than the Tigers 26-man roster for the wild card round? Yeah, I saw that.
Verlander makes more, even more play.
than Hader, right? So, yeah, it's going to be a different-looking Astros team. It looks like Bregman might be on his way out. He will follow in the footsteps of George Springer and Carlos Correa. The Astros not willing to bring back their homegrown guys, I guess, for whatever reason. It's working for them, I guess. It didn't work for them yesterday. But, yeah, lots of good players there in Houston. They'll be right back in the mix next year. Okay, Jingles.
Dusty Baker thing.
Dusty Baker. Yeah, we'll leave it at that for today. We'll have you back on tomorrow. It is the Mega Football Friday edition of the show, breaking down all of our best bets here for the NFL Sunday games. Probably talk a little MLB as well. So best of luck with your bets tonight, buddy. We will catch you again tomorrow.
See you, Joe. Big K Dot tonight. Let's go, pal.
Let's go, baby. Okay, earlier this morning, I spoke to our guy, Jake Butts. Lots going on in the world of college football. Let's throw to that interview. It's now time for our weekly conversation with former Michigan Wolverine and current analyst for the Big Ten Network. Let's bring in our guy, Jake Butts. Jake, how are we making out?
Couldn't be better, Joe. Couldn't be better. Like I said, this has become my favorite time of the week. So excited to talk all things football with you.
Indeed, I love it. Yeah, let's get into it. A lot to discuss here in college and in the NFL as well, and some best bets as well. So those will be coming up towards the end of the segment. So what's new here in college football this season? Of course, it is the new playoff format and the big prize for the regular season. You want to be one of those top four teams who will get a bye in the first round of the playoffs. So I know we're not even at the halfway point of the season yet, but if you have to slot four teams into those top four spots, who's going to get the call?
Can you give me three? Because I can tell you three for sure, which is Bama, Texas, yes. Ohio State. Like, those are the three. And what's really – we saw Bama, okay? My goodness, what a game. I mean, maybe the game of the year last weekend. And I'll say this too. People thought with the expanded playoff, this might water down the regular season. Bama, Georgia certainly didn't look watered down. Texas just continues to roll, regardless of who's at quarterback. Ohio State, Michigan State's a better team than people think. They just have a young quarterback that gives the ball away. Ohio State looks dominant, and they got a big test versus Iowa. Those are the three. If the cutoff is five, I'll give you – it's the AP. The AP got it right. It's Tennessee and it's Georgia. Georgia has some things to clean up. I mean, I watched – I'm watching the first half of that game and I'm like, wow, Bama is just in cruise control, going to dominate Georgia to victory. But they showed a lot to make that game interesting in the end. Obviously, they just ran into 17-year-old phenom Ryan Williams. And then how about Tennessee, though, Joe? I mean, that no one's going to want to play that team. They put up points like it's their job. I mean, it is their job. I mean, that offense has been explosive. Nico Iemelevea, their quarterback, is phenomenal. Gosh, it's going to be tough to face that guy for a few years because he's so young. Those are the top five. I'll just because Georgia lost, I'll say Tennessee at four.
Okay, so you touched on this. Phenom, wide receiver, next great wide receiver at Alabama. 17-year-old Ryan Williams. Man, he's coming off 177-yard performance versus Georgia, 75 of those coming on the game-winning touchdown, five touchdowns on the season so far. What's the ceiling for this guy? Freshman, 17 years old. This guy's nuts.
Let's just talk about the all-time greats at college football and, like, his ceiling's right there. Like, what he just did this past weekend was unbelievable. I was in awe. There's really, like, no analysis needed. Like, if I was calling the game in the booth, I'd almost just shut up and say, let's all just watch this together. That's one of the twitchiest guys I've ever seen on a football field. Like, when his cleat touches the turf, His body can go in any direction. It's unbelievable. He's so sudden. But that play he made to score the touchdown, and when you think about the context of the moment, and you think about the fact he's 17 years old, like, I don't even know if this guy realizes how good he is. Just maybe go in your backyard to our viewers and our listeners. Go just practice this in a controlled setting to run full speed, to jump, to catch a ball, to land on one foot, to not fall down, to then spin around, get back to full speed, and then stop on a dime again and have two Georgia Bulldogs. Those guys are five stars, four stars NFL players, run into each other and then outrun them. That play alone is unbelievable, but you consider what he did throughout the game. Kirby Smart had a great quote that pregame, like, hey, how do you stop Ryan Williams? And he laughed. He's like, you don't stop Ryan Williams. You don't stop a guy like this. Top 10 pick as soon as he's eligible.
Yeah, 17 years old. It's going to be interesting to see where he's at 2 years from now. Okay, so they're off this week, but we got to talk Colorado Buffaloes. This is a team that people like to kick when they're down. They bring some of it upon themselves, but we got to give them a lot of credit here. They're coming off a big win here last week over UCF. They were a 14-point underdog in that game. How serious should we be taking this team going forward?
We got to take them serious. We got to take them serious. And I think if you can just put the emotion aside, you mentioned it, they bring some of it on themselves where it's like, hey, every time we play a team, it's their Super Bowl. You're kind of just opening your chest up to take some shots back for that, right? And certainly last year was a perfect example. The year before Deion gets there, they have one win. They were terrible, bottom of the barrel. And then Deion comes in and the expectations are sky high. And if you're not making a bowl game and you're not even winning 7, 8, 9 games, you're going to take some criticism. So, but you can see the trend. And this year, you can see the clear improvement. This has been a complete overhaul of their roster. They were horrendous before Deion got there. It's taken 30, 40, 50 plus transfer guys a year to get this roster turned over. This is a quarterback at the college level. Star quarterbacks can take you home, period. Shedeur Sanders, just from, I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, from a talent standpoint, he's maybe the most talented quarterback in college football, like in terms of pure arm talent. Travis Hunter, the Heisman's become a quarterback award. Travis Hunter should not be a quarterback, whether it's Jency from Boise State or Travis Hunter. One of those guys deserves the Heisman. Shedeur can take these guys all the way home. I have concerns about their offensive line. That's going to matter. You know, it gets better competition in the deeper in the season you go. That'll matter. But I'm not betting against these guys anymore because Shedeur can make anything happen.
Yeah, they have all that drama attached to them, and that drama always makes things more exciting. It always brings the stakes up. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do in the second half of the season here. In the NFL, I like to say no one wins ugly better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the college game, I think that same label can now apply to your former team here, the Michigan Wolverines. So they continue to win ugly. Another 3-point win last week. 86 yards passing in that one, which is actually an improvement compared to the game versus USC, right? So we have the Wolverines here, 4-1 on the season schedule. The second half looking pretty tough for them. Oddsmakers have them at 8-1 to get into the college football playoff. How do you like their chances and what needs to happen for them to get into the dance here?
Yeah, they're ranked 10th in the AP poll, traveling out to the Pacific Northwest to play a 3-2 unranked Washington team, and Washington's favored. So that kind of tells you the uncertainty about this. Obviously, they got to throw the ball. So let's have some fun with it. Here's a fun little stat for you. Alex Orji, this will be his third start. From start one to start two, he threw 50% more pass attempts and 77% more yards. So if he keeps this up, he will be throwing for 600 yards on 40 attempts versus Illinois. And by the end of the year, he will be throwing for 79,820 yards and 307 attempts. Obviously, I'm just having fun with this right here. That's not the case. But they have to throw the ball. I have concerns because coaches can tell you things without directly saying it. They don't trust him to stand in the pocket and throw the ball consistently. They might have to consider a two-quarterback system. And this weekend will reveal a lot. Washington's defensive coordinator is Steve Belichick. And what we know about the last name Belichick, they're going to take away the strength of their opponent. So Washington's going to come in there and they're going to find a way to slow the run game down. Really, Michigan, what Michigan has done against Minnesota and USC, it's been explosive runs that have been the difference. So for Washington, I don't think you send the house. I think you just play fundamental defense and tackle, force Michigan to drive the ball. If they can't pass the ball, I don't see, especially when you look at the back half of their schedule, all of a sudden Illinois is a big opponent. Oregon, Ohio State, we know those teams. If they can't pass the ball, I don't see how they make it to the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, a total of just 41 for that game against Washington. Washington has gone under in six straight games going back to last season, so it might not be the most exciting game. Okay, so not a stacked schedule by any means this weekend in college football, but a few games of note. Let's discuss number 9 Missouri, 4-0 on the season, taking on 25 Texas A&M. A&M favored by 2.5. Total 48.5. Missouri on a great run betting wise, 11-4 ATS going back to last season. Texas A&M has been an awful bet.
Wow.
1-7 against the spread in their last 8 going back to last season. It looks to be a competitive game here, at least according to the spread. What do you think of this matchup?
Well, I'm glad you laid that out. That should make Missouri fans feel a little bit better. But I have concerns about Missouri in this matchup. And specifically, we went into this season thinking, you know, they have an NFL wide receiver room. They have tons of talent across their offensive line. Obviously, their quarterback, Brady Cook, has shown us what he's capable of. But you look at their last 2 weeks specifically, they beat Vandy by 3. They beat Boston College by 6. So those are games you'd expect a top playoff contending team to dominate, and they simply haven't. And Brady Cook, his accuracy really, really concerns me. The ball placement has been all over the place. The good thing is Texas A&M's pass defense is bottom third per PFF in college football. So maybe they can get something going. On the flip side, A&M, we're gonna have to follow who's going to be their starting quarterback, whether it's Marcel Reed. He's been able to hurt teams with his feet. That's been the case for Boston College and Vanderbilt mobile quarterbacks. But, you know, Joe, I really have concerns about Missouri. They clearly have the talent to do this. But the interesting thing here is, remember, Texas A&M is recruited well. When you look at their composite scores, Texas A&M actually has a more talented roster from a recruit standpoint. So I like Texas A&M in this game.
Okay, that one might be competitive. This next one might not be very competitive at all. Georgia in desperate need of a get-right game, a get-right spot. You know, we saw what happened against Alabama. They were down bad in that one. They made it close the game before Kentucky. They limped by them to pick up that win. So we have them here taking on Auburn. They're favored by 24 points. Do you think they can get right and smack them around here?
They need to. And that's kind of the fork in the road here, because you laid it out perfectly, where Georgia starts the season and completely dominates Clemson. And you're like, wow, okay, they're back. And then, you know, Kentucky, you're sitting there and you're wondering, what team is this? You look at the first half versus Alabama and you're saying, what team really is this? And, you know, Kirby Smart is very similar to like Ryan Day at Ohio State, where it's like you win a ton of games, but you've struggled versus your rivals. So Georgia had this to me is a decision week. What do they want this season to be? It's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to play the game with a chip on your shoulder. At this point, Georgia should have a chip on their shoulder. They should have won the national championship last year. That's what they're telling themselves. But they let the opportunity slip through their hands. Last week, they let that game slip right through their hands. Clearly, they're talented. Carson Beck has earned my respect. In Auburn, they shouldn't provide much resistance. It's just a matter of whether Georgia is going to provide resistance for themselves or not.
Okay, next up, let's talk your best bet of the week in college football. There's been a lot of Rutgers talk on the show here since you joined. If it's not broke, let's not fix it. We have them as a 7-point underdog taking on Nebraska. You think Rutgers can give them a game?
It's absolutely, and 7 points is a real tasty line for me, because Rutgers is built to keep games close. Nebraska is built to keep games close. I mean, remember the Illinois game a few weeks ago, even look at their Purdue game last week, like no points were being scored, and Rutgers has a much better defense than Purdue. One of the things that's really interesting in this game is red zone scoring. So Rutgers is second in college football in red zone scoring. That was the difference in the game versus Washington. Washington outgained them by 200 yards, but they couldn't score in the red zone. That's been the issue for Nebraska. They can't kick field goals. Their kicker's 4 of 9 on the season. So I think what Matt Rhule is saying as the Nebraska head coach, I expect them to go for it on fourth down. Once they get into the plus territory, I think they're going to avoid kicking field goals altogether. But either way, it's an extremely close game. Illinois was able to pop some big-time runs, especially remember the overtime run, obviously, versus Nebraska. Rutgers is built to run the ball. Kyle Manungai, I have him as my second-best running back in the Big Ten. So Rutgers can win this game, but at a minimum, they'll keep it close.
Okay, next up, let's go to your best bet of the week in the NFL. And how convenient. It comes from tonight's game, divisional matchup, tight spread here between the Bucs, small underdog in Atlanta. And you're aligned with me here. You like Tampa Bay, but I'm being conservative. I'm going to take that 1.5 on the spread. You're going to take them on the money line here.
Yeah, I look at these teams as Tampa Bay is an ascending team, and Baker Mayfield is a guy with a completely renewed career. Chris Godwin, they moved him down into the slot, and gosh, has he been such a weapon. We know Mike Evans. I mean, that guy, he just cranks out 1,000-yard seasons like there's no other option. Bucs are 2-0 against the spread as underdogs this season, including an outright win. They beat Detroit, right? And when you look at the stats, those tell one thing. But then you can go into schedule-adjusted stats, and all of a sudden, the Bucs look even better. Buccaneers are going to want to throw the ball. Atlanta has a good secondary. The key is, though, is the Buccaneers have great pass protection. They're a top-half pass protection. Atlanta is a bottom-5 pass rush. So Baker's going to have plenty of time. The key matchup here is Atlanta disguises coverage. Number one in terms of safety, pre-snap, post-snap disguises. So for Baker Mayfield, can they use Chris Godwin in motion to start to get some clues pre-snap? If he can get a clean picture, that ball will be out on time. They'll be able to move it. Kirk Cousins, man, he's looked like the definition of the word average this year. Yes. The Buccaneers, they're just going to continue to roll, in my opinion.
We are in agreement. Okay, something fun here for the end. So you played at a big-time program in college football. You're a former Michigan Wolverine. So what I always wonder about, you see it in TV, in the movies all the time, if you're into the sports shows and movies like I am, like a lot of guys are, and it's the recruitment process, getting recruited as a high school student, going to these big schools. The one that sticks out to me, the movie He Got Game. One scene in particular, I don't know if you've seen that movie, Jake, but one scene in with Ray, it's a great movie, Spike Lee, Ray Allen. One scene in particular, I think the viewers, if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But what is that process like? Is it a bit of an exaggeration what we see in the movies on TV? How does that whole thing work?
Yeah, so it's changed now too with NIL. So I can only imagine what it would have been like had I had the chance to capitalize on NIL. But it's the movies do it right, and I think honestly the movies kind of forced program. It set the expectations for recruits, and programs had to adapt. You know, there's cool things like teams will send you letters, but a lot of those are just printed and they send them out to everybody. Hey, we're interested. One of the coolest things is getting a handwritten letter from a coach, you can, with the ink, with the signature. Hey, congrats on your win last weekend. We're thinking about you. Then you have the visits, and there's a difference between unofficial and official visits. Unofficial visits, you're going up there to watch a game. They roll out the red carpet for you. You get to eat a good meal. You get to talk to the coaches. You get to walk around campus. For me at Michigan, I got to see some unbelievable games. I saw 2011 Notre Dame, Michigan under the lights, Denard Robinson to Roy Roundtree in the end zone. At the time, it was a record-setting crowd, nearly 115,000. And I'm on the 50-yard line for that, best seats in the house. And then you have the official visits, and that's where things get really fun because the schools can then pay for you to come on campus. They put you up in a really nice hotel. They put you with a current player on the team. You get a few bucks to go out there and spend. So you eat a really nice dinner, and then you get to go around campus and go to the bars, and you get to skip all the lines. We went to a liquor store and were able to drink and back with the owner. So that nice. Stuff was all cool, but yeah. You know, what's really cool too, is once you commit to a school, walking around your high school with all your friends, you know, it does feel like a big deal. You really don't get that anymore. Even when you get drafted to the NFL, it's a business, but back in high school, once you commit, you become the big man on campus. That's always fun.
Yeah. So did you have those vibes walking around Michigan, big man on campus? Were you walking around with the Letterman jacket on and people saying, hey, there's the guy on the football team, Jake Butt, the big tight end? Was there that vibe? That must have been pretty cool. Come on.
Well, I got to see both sides of it. We were terrible my first 2 years. So we were 7-6, 5-7. And I remember trying to skip the line at the bars as a freshman. And they were like, you guys suck this year. Like, you got to wait in line. So funny enough. But then when Jim Harbaugh got there, and he would tell us this too, he's like, the best feeling is winning a game and then going to class on Monday. He's like, you get to puff your chest out a little bit more. The teachers congratulate you. He's exactly right. I mean, Michigan's a big campus. It's 50,000 students. So a lot of them care more about school than sports. But occasionally you'd get the, you know, congrats or ask, you know, get asked to take a picture from some students.
Very, very cool. That must have been an absolute blast. Okay, Jake, we will leave it at that. We're going to get a lot more stories out of you, though, as the season goes on. Best of luck here with your picks. Best of luck with your work with the Big Ten Network this weekend. And we look forward to chatting with you again next Thursday.
Always good, Joe.
I have been recruited to play in several fantasy leagues, both football and baseball. Some have worked out, some have not, but that's a pretty cool process as well. Okay, so Thursday Night Football tonight, 59% of the chat likes the Bucs to cover as a small favorite there. So 59% of you guys are aligned with me. Let's go, Baker. Let's go, Tampa Bay. So recap of the picks here. Yeah, Buccaneers plus one for me. I like Kate Otten to go over his receiving yard total. Jingles took A.J. Terrell, five or more tackles, plus 140. You're looking for a plus money bet, and he likes Kirk Cousins to have a decent night through the air over 228.5. Major League Baseball elimination game going down in Milwaukee. I like the Mets first five innings. You can't trust that bullpen of the Mets. That will ultimately be what does them in. Maybe not tonight, but maybe down the line here. And Jingles went Jose Quintana under 4.5 hits. Quintana's been hot, but his angle is a little bit of it is that Quintana might have an early hook here tonight, so we shall see. Two big games, great two-screen experience, Thursday Night Football on one, MLB playoffs on the other. Okay, massive show coming up tomorrow here, guys. It is the Mega Football Friday edition. Before you bet, Brad Powers will be by, adding a couple of best bets to his card here this weekend in college football. And then all of the Sunday games, all of our best bets for that. Probably going to touch on some Major League Baseball here as well. So we will leave it at that for today. Thank you to both my guests today. Thank you to producer Mick for producing. Thank you to BetMGM for sponsoring the show today. Thank you to all the viewers for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets tonight. I will catch you guys again tomorrow. Woo!